Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed, the authentic source of Nigerian information. Positive Nigerian energy all the way. Okay, right about now, we have a little bit of flavor to today's content, as we have in the studios with us Chris Paul Otaigwe, he's a Niger Times reporter, and of course, Niger Times reporter is a media partner with Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Good day to you, sir.
Good day. My pleasure to be here.
Of course, it's good having you in the studios with us. Mm-hmm. Okay, so together we'll be looking at the 2020 United States election scheduled for today, 3rd November. And we'll be looking at the two major party candidates are the Republican incumbent President Donald Trump and Democratic former Vice President Joe Biden. And well, of course, still on the topic, JB and DG. Who is better for diaspora Nigerians? Anyway, before we go into detailed conversation, let me share something. I shared it this morning, but I feel the need to do that again, talking about the talking about the nine Nigerian Americans who are also in the race at the federal, state, and local levels. We're talking about the nine Nigerians contesting in the United States elections. Okay, so we have at least nine Nigerian Americans who are also in the race. We have Oye Owolewa from Kwara State. He holds a doctor of philosophy, and he holds a degree in pharmacy from the Northeastern University, Boston. Is contesting on the platform of the Democratic Party to represent the District of Columbia, and is seeking for a shadow non-voting seat in the House of Representatives, and if elected, would be the first Nigerian congressman in the country's history. We have Esther Agbaje. She's a 35-year-old daughter of an Episcopal priest and a librarian, both Nigerian immigrants, is seeking to represent District 59B in Minnesota House of Representatives on the platform of the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party, an affiliate of the United States Democratic Party. We have Yomi Faparusi, an Ibadan-born native of Ode-Ekiti in Ekiti State, and is seeking election as an independent candidate to represent the state of Tennessee in the Congress. And we have Yinka Faliti, born in Lagos, migrated to the United States at the age of 7. He's the Democratic Party nominee for Missouri Secretary of State. Okay, so we have Paul Akinjo from Ondo. He's running for election to the California State Assembly under the Democratic Party to represent District 12. And we also have Adewumi Kuforiji from Oyo. He's vying to represent District 34 in the Delaware House of Representatives. He holds a degree in accounting and a master's in business administration from the Delaware State University. Okay, we have April Ademuluyi, Ngozi Akubike, and Benjamin Usemen, and they will be contesting at the local government level respectively. All right, so that's all we've got for the nine Nigerians who are also contesting in the United States elections. All right, so over to you, Chris. It's definitely good to have you here. I said that earlier.
Yeah,
okay, so let's get into the conversation.
Yeah.
First of all, what is your take, looking at the election in general, if you've been following, what is your take on the United States election currently ongoing at the moment?
Oh, yes, thank you very much. The election, as we have it today, is like no other in the history of the United States, and indeed in the history of any sane country, really. Because the issues driving it are unprecedented. There are things. An American would tell you, if you had asked him, if you had given him that picture 5 years ago, What if America turns the maybe that's Hollywood. Not Hollywood will do that for you.
Okay.
And but here it is, Hollywood is
happening, is what, in, real
happening
life.
In real life to them. You know, so really, it should be an easy win, you know, for Democrats. Let's just go straight to the specifics.
Just like that.
Just like
why,
that.
Yeah. Why do you say that?
Ordinarily.
Okay.
Ordinarily.
Okay.
The story doesn't end there.
All right.
Trump has been an epitome of anything that is bad in leadership. And he has, imagine somebody who lies by the minute. And he lies, he has accepted it. Not just a second, he has accepted it is something that it has become an obligation to himself. That he must lie by the minute. And you understand? And that is antithetical to the position that he occupies.
Yes, of
course. Antithetical to anything that is right. You know, and you know, so that alone, one lie almost put one president out. That was Bill Clinton. Just that he lied that it had anything to do with Monica Lewinsky. He was impeached. He was almost going to be thrown out. One lie. And I recall that the character, I call them characters now, because they have actually, those supporting Trump, anywhere at all in America, have actually accepted that they themselves are bad. They have allowed the beast, the demons in them to come out. Mm. I'm talking about Lindsey Graham, for instance. I recall that during, Bill Clinton's impeachment, he was so vocal as a Republican senator, saying that you don't even have to
lie.
No, you don't even have to commit a crime to be impeached. Just that you lied. Just that, and even a hint, an idea of misdemeanor on your part is enough to just get you out of there. And Clinton was impeached. That same character is here today. Even he has the temerity to say, yes, you can quote my words, but that doesn't move me. You know? So they have gone crazy. Do you understand? So I don't know. I don't like to dignify idiocy. I don't dignify things that disgust the mind, that disgust the eyes. Okay? Now, so that's Trump.
Okay.
He's, I don't want to say he's a criminal, but unfortunately, so many things that have been unnethered against him, you know, prove that. I mean, push the argument to that direction.
Okay, so
most of the people around him have been jailed.
Mm.
They were jailed not because of the crime they committed, but the crime they committed on his behalf.
Serving him.
Yeah, so on his behalf. Do you understand? Accomplices to murder being arrested, but the murderer is left just there. So Trump is an evident and prevalent danger to America's democracy right now. And all Americans know that, or majority of Americans know that, okay? Unfortunately, he has a base. And that base is a problem now to the whole system. And so they have to be very careful how they handle him, okay? The base has shrunken a bit because of COVID-19. COVID-19 actually came out to expose his incompetence, his craziness, his anything but good kind of character. COVID-19 has brought him out naked. Okay? And, of course, and well, unfortunately, also COVID-19 seems to have also given him some arguments, some leverage. Okay? Let's look at, well, let me just digress a little bit, about, you know, to this COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay.
COVID-19 came and we were made to know that in fact this is worse than HIV. This is what worse than Ebola. This is the end of humanity. And so we have to lock down. Otherwise we would die. We all locked down and rather than decrease, the thing was on the increase. We were in our houses and watching the thing go up and up and up and up. And we were saying, what do we do? If we lock down, if we are inside our house, it's going up. Outside our house, what will happen? So what we do, at the end of the day, Lockdown destroyed a lot of destroyed global economies. And Trump has been against lockdown. Okay, go and wear a mask. But we found out that mask, as good as it is, as a mitigating agent against the virus,
COVID-19,
also has its own danger. People have been known to have died wearing masks because
inability to breathe properly.
Thank you. And Trump has been against wearing of masks. All right. And unfortunately, the rhetoric that was built around the virus was too dangerous that, you know, any small loophole would just cut it. And that's what has happened. Because the idea they gave us about coronavirus is that if it's person to person, at the point it's from surface to hand to mouth or wherever, at some point anything could cause you corona. Even if you are thinking too wrongly, you will get coronavirus.
Please.
But, you know, I'm telling you. So the thing became a threat, a very potent threat to humanity. And so government went haywire. Governments across the world went haywire. And look at what happened. Economies fell needlessly. And all of this have gone to power Trump's position, Trump's anti-coronavirus position. And of course, emboldened is, base. Do you understand? Yes, America has the highest death rate, the highest infection rate right now. But how that happens, nobody knows. Because according to Trump, anybody who dies is corona. Whether you die spiritually is corona. Whether you died in your sleep peacefully is now corona. So that alone puts a question mark. Because before corona, again, people were dying. And nobody labeled them corona. Or even HIV or Ebola. And then coupled with the fact that people who have been treated, there's also the discharge part. And which is what, that's another argument is raising. I was there, I am alive. Now he's saying, I am a superhuman. I died in corona, now I've resurrected like Jesus Christ. Everybody, Trump is the man. So that's where we are. So, check out people who are following him. They are not dumb. They are not dead brains. They think. So once, if his argument was not making sense, they won't follow him. So it makes some sense. And now Biden has not in. Biden is a loose talker. He can talk but I like him. Okay? And America likes him.
But it looks like you've completely fallen, to his own side.
No,
looking at the your arguments.
No, but I'm not finished. I'm just telling you.
Okay. Because if it's not Trump, then I want to believe that it's Biden for you.
Yes,
but
I'm a bit emotional or sentimental about Biden.
Okay.
But objective. Okay, Biden has come to become an embodiment of the American, the average American life and experience. That's his life story tells it. This is a man who lost his wife, 2 children at less than 30, 29 or thereabout. He was just elected a senator. Okay? And I think he got sworn in by the bedside of his family in the hospital. And he's lost a son recently, Bo Biden, who had become an adult, became a father, and all of that, and they become buddy-buddy, and he lost him. And his son has served through, his stories. Biden's narrative is just the American life, the American humanity, as it were. Do you understand? The people tell, he represents the people of America, those people who are not at the top.
Okay.
The working life, the working American family.
You mean it can relate to every American, looking at the lifestyle
yes,
in general?
Yes, it relates across board. And his life And that's a man who has no scandal. Okay?
Mm.
And he is just a good man. He's a good man. Biden is a good man. All right? And yes, he's made mistakes in the past, you know, that threatened his
campaign
then, you know, rally against blacks and what have you. But he's a man who owns up when he knows he's made a mistake.
Mm.
You know, so he's just like you and I, okay? There's no air, you know, and he's just a good guy. So, but then he can talk loose sometimes,
especially with his debate.
Yes, he does. I look at
but
the last debate.
Maybe it was out of frustration. On the other hand, no, but no, I'm just being neutral. Not, yes, okay, no, yes, let me hear.
Yeah,
me.
He doesn't know how to guard his moment. All right,
mm.
He's an excitable talker. It's when he's angry, he just tell it to you straight. And he's excited, he doesn't hide it, you know. And like that point he almost gave Trump when he said he was going to ban fossil fuel. That was a gaffe, okay? And that was almost a cheap one for Trump. And Trump went, whoa, he said, oh. Pennsylvania, are you listening? This one, are you listening? You know, but his managers, his hand handlers have been trying to
manage
it, and, you know, but Biden is still Biden. Everybody loves Biden. Biden elicits something from you. When you experience Biden, you let me tell you my first experience with Biden. I'm sorry I have to talk like this because this.
Okay. I was actually going to ask that. Yeah. Is this love or is this just not wanting Trump? Even for the American people.
You know, I don't know how to say it. You know, as much as I would like to be objective, something that I would say might make me look like I'm not. I'm just stating it as it is. Trump has 70, 80-something percent bad. You know, it's 80-something percent bad. 15% or less than that is a bit good. You can hear it. You can manage it. All right, yes. But Biden is the other way around. Biden is 85% or more good, then less than that, less than 15 or thereabout, bad. Well, not bad.
Questionable.
Terrible. Or horrible. Yeah, you know, but that's just Biden. Anyway,
I was going to go mild, but okay.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's true, because you just say, bah, and when he says it, the consequences sometimes can set him back. So,
okay.
You know, but it still makes a man. So, my first encounter with Biden was Obama.
Mm.
It was, DNC convention.
Okay.
And Bill Clinton, I've always loved Bill Clinton, and then I fell in love with Obama. And I've never really heard about Biden.
Mm.
So anything Bill says, Bill Clinton, I just want to know it. And he said one day, by the time, you know, he was going to speak before Biden.
Okay.
And he said when Bill, Barack Obama, you know, his first assignment was to pick his vice president. And he hit it right from the park. That's what Bill Clinton said.
Mm.
And then he went, Joe Biden, I love Joe Biden, and America will love Joe Biden.
Mm.
And since then, I've been following Joe Biden.
Oh, okay, so because Bill Clinton said so.
Not because Bill Clinton said so. Okay, you know what I said?
Of course.
Exactly. And you know, when Joe Biden came out, before he came out, it was his son. His son came to Bo.
Mm.
As I when Bo died.
I can even see the emotions on your face right now.
When Bo came, and that was my first time to see Bo, and unfortunately the last time, because after that I switched up. And the way Bo introduced his dad, you will cry. I'm telling you, if you were in that audience, you will cry. And when the man came, the way they hugged each other, it was out of this world. They were like, and then when he now came to say it, that was the first thing he said. He said his dad would tell him that something to the effect that a man becomes a man or is proud when he sees his son talking about him to the public or something like that. And he said, I'm a man. I'm a man today. You know, so it's, he had that resonance, okay?
Yes.
And then when I'm going back that time to also try to make you feel Biden. I'm not advertising him here.
Because it looks like that already.
But I'm putting the example, you know. So when he started, he said he learned a lot of things from his mom, okay? He said, his mom, that he used to stutter, he was a stammerer when he was.
Imagine.
He said, you know, because his mom didn't want to shame him, didn't want me to him to feel bad. And when he started, his mom said, oh, Biden, when you, it wasn't so hard, it's hard for you to speak it out, you know, so because he was in your stammering, yeah. You know. And then he said, one thing that his mom was in the audience at the time.
Mm.
And each time he said those things, the camera would go to the mom. And his mom said, yes, I said it, I did it. And then he now said one that touched me. He said, you know, and that's why he decided to take on Trump. All right?
Okay.
He said, in school, when he was small,
yes.
When big guys would come bully him, and then would cry home to his mom would turn him back. You go back there, all right, and show him. Let nobody bully you or something like that. His mom would say, you are not sitting here. You are going to go back there and fight that guy. And he will go. And he developed strength, developed himself. And the mom will go, yes, I said this. You know, so his story, you understand? And in fact, maybe a lot of people don't know. This is my own conspiracy theory I'm going to say now.
Okay.
If Biden had come out in 2016, there was no way Trump would have won. People don't know that. There was no way on this planet that Trump would have won.
Okay, so why do you say that?
Yes, because you find out that was the time Bo died, all right? So they told him run. He said, no, I can't run. I have to mourn my child. Even though Bo had told him, I think you should run after Obama. You know, and I'm sure he loves Bo, he listens to Bo. By the way, Kamala Harris was an attorney general, Bo was an attorney general of Delaware or something, you know, and so they were colleagues with Kamala, who is
with
now,
Kamala.
And they related well, you know, and that was why during the debates, when that first debate, I think, when Kamala took on Biden, Biden was shocked. What happened now? You know, even the wife was shocked. What happened? Well, guess what? And that's another part of Biden that we're seeing at play that Trump doesn't have. This was somebody who was rude to Biden publicly at the debates. All right? That almost make him run out of reckoning. That is the person Biden has picked as his vice.
Yes.
Does Trump have that heart? Does he have that capacity to forgive and to see through an offense? Do you understand? To see the value somebody's got. So in every way, angle, form or shape, right? Biden trumps Trump. All right? They're not in the same category. Trump doesn't know nothing.
About?
Anything. No, I'm not abusing him, but I'm just telling you, it's in the public domain. It's in the public space. What I'm telling you is not an insult. It's a description.
I thought we were going to say about, you know, maybe human feelings, but saying that he doesn't know anything.
About anything. He just talks. He just makes things up as he goes along. All right? But well, maybe that was too harsh. Yeah, but yes. But I still stand by it.
So you're not
taking when it comes to critical issues, he doesn't. He doesn't have that intellectual capacity, do you understand, for sustained high-level conversation, all right? He just picks a word or picks something that catches his fancy and he'll home in on it and it builds a world around it, you know. And so he is, but then, okay, I'm sure you are going to ask me, how then did he become a billionaire? Well, if he doesn't know anything about anything.
I'm going to ask, but yes. At this point, we have to involve one more person in this conversation.
Please.
Because, of course, Diaspora Discourse, and as promised, we'll be talking to Professor Lade Adupi, exactly 4 p.m. Nigeria time. It's about 4 minutes away.
Okay.
And Professor Lade Adupi, Faculty Associate, it's a Faculty Associate, Donor Human Rights Center, Energy Institute, University of Michigan. And we will be talking about the same conversation, talking about J or D, exactly, who is better for diaspora Nigerians. Okay, so well, at this point, let's take a very, very, very short break, and when we come back, we will be three right in this conversation. Stay tuned to Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed, the authentic source of Nigerian information, positive Nigerian energy all the way. Okay, of course, still on the conversation, we're still talking about the United States election, and we were talking well, it's definitely not me alone. I'm used to being alone. I was going to go on with the conversation. But, of course, we still have Chris Paul Otagbe, a Niger Times reporter, and, of course, Niger Times media partner with Spirit of Nigeria Radio. And at this moment, as promised, we have Professor Lade Adupi, as a Faculty Associate to Donia Human Rights Center, Energy Institute, University of Michigan. Good day to you, sir.
Nice to speak with you too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for doing this with us. You're welcome to Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
All right, sir. Okay, so for the first question I should ask you is, how are you doing, and what does it feel like right now in the United States? Hello? Hello? Okay. All right. Are you with me, sir? Can you hear me? Okay, looks like the network is...
Hello?
Hello, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, all right. Okay, so I was asking that at this very moment, what does it feel like in the United States? Okay, looks like the network is getting in between. Okay, well, while we are still trying to rectify this, let's go on with our conversation.
Yeah.
Okay, so before that break, you were saying very interesting things, and well, you've for some reasons you've put in the old emotions of Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And well, you've been, you know, a major supporter. Okay, well, it looks like hello.
Hello, Prof.
Hello. Okay, well, we hope that the network actually cooperates with us so we can get to do this with Professor Lade Adupi.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, you were saying something.
Yeah, from where do I take it now?
Okay, so you were just talking about the... you're talking about both parties.
Okay, yes.
And
hello.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hello, sir.
Yes.
Okay, so I was asking that how is it exactly... Like, what is it like today in the United States?
It's a lot of people are excited about voting, and a lot of people are queuing up to vote. So it's an important election, and many people are taking it seriously. So I'll say that it's been a nice day, and it's been very good with everybody coming out and they're lining up at their polling station, observing the rules, getting ready to vote.
Yes, Prof, that's quite nice to hear. But we know that the Republicans are trying to this mail-in ballot issue. How is it affecting Nigerians?
The mail-in ballot. Well, it depends on the state that you live in.
Okay.
You know, the interesting thing about the electoral process in the United States is that it is not federally organized.
Yes. Mm.
So each state organizes its own election.
Yeah, but they have a rule. They have rules that they all. They have similar rules. I think so.
Hello, no, all states make the rules.
Yes.
States make the rules about the election. So
okay.
not the federal. The federal doesn't make any rules.
We know that.
So there is no, unlike in Nigeria, where there is INEC, there is no INEC. So
mm-hmm.
each state has its own electoral umpire.
Beautiful.
So the state where I live in, the state of Michigan, in 2018, the people voted to make absentee ballot of the required process of voting.
Mm.
So now, if you don't want to go and vote on election day, you can request for a ballot, and it will be mailed to you wherever in the world you are. Then the second point is that you can register even on election day to vote. So if you haven't registered before today, you can go to your polling place today and register to vote once you show your ID. So it varies from state to state, I would say.
All right, but Trump is also trying to attack that when he said all results have to be in by today, and anybody whose polls are not counted by today should kind of forget it or something. How are you reacting to that?
No, well, that's a very good question. But the only thing is that the issue here is that Trump is just saying it doesn't have the power to
mm-hmm.
determine the outcome of an election. It doesn't have the power to determine how votes are counted. So counting of votes takes place at the state level. And what the electoral law in each state says is that votes will start to be counted today in some states, and votes counting actually started in some other states a few weeks ago. So, but the point again is that in the state of Michigan, where I live, votes, they will start counting the votes today at 8 p.m. in southeast Michigan. And in the northern part of Michigan, they will start at 9 p.m. And that is because there are two time zones in the state of Michigan.
Mm.
So the southeast part of Michigan operates on the eastern time zone,
mm-hmm.
whereas the northern part of Michigan, it's 1 hour behind us here. Mm.
Okay.
So once the polling place is closed at 8 p.m. southeastern Michigan, or 9 p.m. northern Michigan, they will start counting the votes.
Okay.
And again, counting of votes will continue as long as all the ballots are yet to be counted. So at the end of the day, they are not going to certify the election today. So they will certify the election when they are done counting. So Trump might say that, well, the winner will have to be declared today. That is not how it is going to happen. The winner will be declared when all votes are counted.
Well, thank you for that, Prof. Then Trump is never short of issues. You know, and then what about this? What is the difference between drive-through voting and mail-in voting? That's one. Then secondly, it was ruled the Republicans lost the appeal. I mean, the battle yesterday when their suit was rejected, was thrown out. You know. Against they want
to
do.
Can you say that again?
I said the drive through.
Can you say that again?
Drive through voting.
Oh, okay. That's in Texas.
In Texas, you know, and that was going to cost 127,000 ballots, you know, and the judges.
Yes.
The judge threw that case out. But even that doesn't seem the story has ended there, because it's going for an appeal or something. But I need you to tell us. Let's hope that it doesn't happen the way they are planning. But what will be the impact of that, really?
Yeah, if that were to happen, that could have the potential impact of changing the outcome of the election in the state of Texas. And the reason is that the area that is the area called Harris County, which includes parts of Houston, Austin, and a lot of highly populated area in the state of Texas, it's considered to be heavily Democratic. So if driving voting in that the Harris County clerk put in place to for the safety of the people were to be overturned, that will have impact on the election, and that could change the outcome of the election. And that's because Texas this year, a lot of people are sensing that it might actually turn blue, and that will be the first time that a Democrat will win the state of Texas since 1992 or 1974.
Yes. Well, thank you, Prof. So, you're up to three now. We can't let you go until we get everything. Now, 2016. Trump won, you know, to the surprise of everybody. Yes, you know, and we did not know that he has a base that's so strong and all of that. But besides that, what do you...
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me, Prof? Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I am.
Yes.
I'm listening.
So, but besides that, you know, I see some, even some Nigerians love Trump. Do you love Trump, sir? Hello?
Absolutely not.
Okay, beautiful. Okay.
Hello,
then.
Absolutely not.
Okay, then the question then is, but some Nigerians do love Trump. Why do you think even some people, permit me to use some words now, even some people that you believe are sane people, they love Trump. Why do you think so? What is it about Trump that
is lovable?
That's lovable, thank you, at all.
Yeah, well, here is the thing. You know, for Nigerians that love Trump, I think there are three or four reasons that can be adduced for that.
Okay.
The first is that a lot of Nigerians, particularly a lot of Nigerians in Nigeria who love Trump, believe that Trump is implementing some sort of Christian agenda. That is one. So they believe that he's a godsend and it's implementing a Christian agenda. And that in itself is very wrong, because Trump is someone that has never been to church in his life. So how could you believe that someone that has never been to church in his life is suddenly implementing a supposedly Christian agenda? So that is one. Then the second point that I see that makes people to love Trump is that we seems not to have gotten out of this mold of militarism in Nigeria, where we see people that that talks in a particular way or that says something that makes them look strong to be a strong leader. So for us, for a lot of Nigerians, they do not seem to be able to make a distinction between what a democratic practice is and what a strong leader is. So because Trump projects himself as a strong leader who can do whatever he likes, so they think that, that is how a leader should be. And then what I sometimes tell Nigerians is that if you think, a militarist approach to leadership is what makes a leader, then that is very wrong, because that in itself is an aberration of democratic practice.
Yes.
So that is the second point that makes a lot of Nigerians think that Trump is best for them. Then the third factor that I see there is that you have a couple of Nigerians who are sympathetic to the former President Jonathan. And the narrative that is constructed around that is that, it was former President Obama that made Jonathan to lose that election in 2015 to Buhari. But that in itself is also wrong.
Exactly.
Because Obama did not in any way influence any election in Nigeria.
Yes.
So what Obama did was to just say that, okay, Nigerians should respect the outcome of this election, that is the 2015 election. And that is what any American head of state or an American president would have done, because that is what they always do. Anytime an election is going to take place in any country, they will issue a statement asking that democratic practice should be observed. So, for many Nigerians who are sympathetic to Jonathan, they thought that Obama made Jonathan to lose the election. Then the fourth factor is the erroneous impression that a lot of those who are sympathetic to IPOB have about Trump supporting IPOB. And that is actually wrong. That is a narrative that was constructed by some of those who are IPOB supporters who thought that a Trump presidency would accelerate the disintegration of Nigeria and therefore make way for the emergence of the Republic of Biafra.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the four factors responsible for why a lot of Nigerians think that Trump is a good president. But to me, Trump has been an aberration to everything that is democratic. So he doesn't believe in democracy,
yes,
and he likes to be an authoritarian leader.
In fact, Prof, I thank you. I was just signaling to our lady here that, you see, Prof has vindicated me finally. You know, I even think the last one you said, that is another, he's a dictator of a sort. I don't even think Trump understands dictatorship. He's just there to protect anything that will protect his interest. He uses everything as a vehicle. You know, it's just like it's hardened or seasoned criminal. You know, even Bloomberg said it. He said he's a con man. He said it before the 2016 election, he said it after. And it's been proven that Trump is a con artist.
Yeah.
Even the Michael Cohen, he's a personal lawyer who went to jail for him.
Yeah.
I've said it so many times that he was even the one pushing his con You know, so I don't understand how America would allow this to happen to them. And they are beginning to see they are beginning to see now that Trump is like a bull in a china shop. He's going to destroy virtually everything. You know, I mean, imagine sir? Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you. Yes, I am.
Imagine. In fact, they've lost track of outrage now. They don't know how to be outraged anymore. I was just saying that, just that Bill Clinton lied that he had anything to do with Monica Lewinsky. Just he lied, just that one lie.
Mm.
I even say it's half when you compare to Trump's now. He was impeached, just that one lie. What's his name? Let's leave the presidency now. Bill Cosby was thrown into jail because of his affairs, his illicit affairs with women. And he didn't say it. He did. It was on nothing one way or the other. But here, this man confessed it to the whole public that he does this, he does that to women. And nothing happened to him. To make it worse, he stands before his crowd, before his base, to say that if he shoots somebody dead now, nothing will happen to him. And nothing has happened to him. So many things. So he has taken America on such a dizzying spell that America does not know, they can't understand. I just see, you know, I wish Fela were alive. Fela would be full of
it.
They made a song about it. But they were asking me, what kind of song would I know? And my mind went to Fela there. And because what made... Hello? Are you with me, sir?
Okay.
Hello.
So,
okay. Yes, I am.
You know, my mind went straight to Fela because Fela would now make so much out of it. They are teaching us how to do democracy. Now, democracy is teaching them how to behave themselves. Now, we are in a crazy Trump time. Trump, what has made it worse for the world is that before Trump came into the building, America was connected to the world. It was the center of the world. And so, so many things about the globe revolved around it, you know, and connected to it. And so Trump came and just mindlessly began to cut off those roots, you know. So, and everybody is watching him. And to the extent that he has turned America into a ridicule, you know, into some, you know. So, at the end of the day, I don't know. I'm right now I'm nervous because I don't know what will happen. His soldiers,
no,
his storms
are
up and about.
He's not going to win.
No, he won't win. I know he won't win, but he wants to do a rougher thing now. Turn into a rougher fight.
No, he can't. He can't. Uh-huh. He can't do anything. You know, but one thing we should also bear in mind is that, you know, sometimes we think.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, bro.
Looks like the network has come in between the conversation.
Yes,
but of course, I like his perspective and his certainty and should I call it assurance that Trump is not going to win the election?
Trump are never going to win this election. Biden is in town. All right, and like I said before, in fact, when he comes back, I will raise it. I knew Biden. If Biden had contested in 2016, Democrats would not have lost. All right. That was before we went to break. That was what we were talking about.
Yes.
Democrats lost in 2015 because there were so many shady things that happened. All right. You had the. In fact, I think it was the Libyan thing that wrecked the Democrat, Hillary, and wrecked the Democrats' chances for 2016. Hillary didn't come clean. Nobody trusted her. Nobody liked her, and they now killed themselves at their primaries. When they, you know, egged out Bernie Sanders in questionable circumstances. And, you know, and Trump naturally got protest votes against Bernie. Okay, Prof. Yeah, so,
yeah.
You know, I was saying that, in fact, if Biden had contested in 2016, I don't think Trump would have won at all. Do you believe so?
If Biden had contested in 2016, that Trump would not have won the election.
Yeah, not necessarily. There are several factors responsible for why Trump won in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
One of such is that usually Americans, you know, they like to have a change in government once a president has served two terms in office. So there has been two exceptions when that didn't happen in the last 100 years. The first was in 1988 when Herbert Walker Bush won. Then Bush was vice president to. So that was one of those few exceptions, one of those two exceptions.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the factors that worked in favor of Trump in 2016. Then the second factor that worked in his favor was because a lot of voters who are regularly Democratic voters did not come out to vote in 2016. And that was because most of the polls, if not all the polls, were showing that Hillary was going to win. And a lot of them didn't like Hillary, and they didn't like the way Bernie Sanders was treated in the Democratic Party's primary.
Exactly.
So they opted to sit at home that day. For example, in the state of Michigan, that Donald Trump won by about 10,700 votes, over 400,000 voters didn't come out to vote.
Wow.
And most of those voters are those who vote for the Democratic Party regularly. Oh. Then secondly, the third party candidates, Jill Stein of the Green Party, as well as the candidate of the Libertarian Party, got over 200,000 votes in the state, and those votes could have gone to Hillary Clinton. So the same thing with Pennsylvania. Trump won Pennsylvania by 44,000 votes, and he won Wisconsin by 22,000 votes. But if you look at the number of Democratic voters that didn't come out to vote, or those that voted for a third party, they were in those three states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, about 2 million of them didn't come out to vote. So that was what made it possible for Trump to win. Then the third factor is the Russian factor, where there was a lot of disinformation, particularly on social media, about Hillary. You know, about Hillary. So some of those misinformation included the fact that, Hillary was very sick and that she was going to die very soon. And that made a lot of people nervous because they didn't want a sick president in office. Mm. Then the fourth factor is that of the woman factor. Mm. So a lot of people sometimes have the erroneous belief that, because the United States is considered to be an advanced democratic state, that women, that a woman can win the presidency. But that in itself is not actually correct. So that was one of the factors that worked against Hillary, because a lot of people were not ready for a woman president. So when you put all of these four factors together, then it begins to make sense why Hillary would lose to a Donald Trump. That was seen as supposedly a change candidate in 2016. So, but things are different right now. Things are different because, first, Biden is a known quantity. He's someone that is well known within the Democratic Party and within the American political system. He's been around for a while and everyone knows him very well. So, which is why there is no lie you can tell against him that will stick. Mm-hmm. And of course, Trump had tried several times to tell all sort of lies about Biden, but no one believes all those lies because he's well known.
Prof, as Biden would say, Americans know me. America knows me. I know America, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yes, you know. So, well, having said all of this, without mincing words, Trump has been a disaster to America's democracy, and so there'll be a lot of house cleaning and packing, damage control, you know, and all of that, trying to repair America's democratic architecture and superstructure, as it were. How much of this do you think would happen post-Trump, and how do you think it will affect the world, really?
The post-Trump era is going to be defined by a new re-engagement with the rest of the world by a Biden presidency.
Okay.
And what I mean by new re-engagement with the rest of the world is that in the last 4 years, one of the things that Trump have succeeded in doing is to completely disengage the United States from the rest of the world. And that is because, like I said earlier on, sometimes we think the American presidency is all-powerful. But that is domestically. Domestically, the American presidency doesn't have a lot of power. But in terms of crafting foreign policy, that is where they have a lot of power, and that is one area in which Trump has succeeded in making sure that American voice is no longer respected in the world. And that is because he believes that, well, America is it's an America first agenda, which is actually not a correct agenda. It's what he promotes. So, but in the post-Trump era, what we are going to be seeing is the realignment of forces in reshaping power around the world. And that will mean a form of realliance and a form of re-engagement with all of the allies of the United States, particularly those in Western Europe and by the rest of the world. More importantly, is that once again, there will be a voice for the promotion of democracy and the promotion of democratic practices around the world. And that is because a Biden presidency will see the interest of the United States has been promoted by the promotion of democratic practices around the world. And this has been absent in the last 4 years.
Now, with all of that, there is still something hanging, sir. First of all, you know, there's the Russian factor that has dominated this whole period. How do you see Biden relating with Putin from here on? And do you believe that America want to take vengeance on Putin's tampering of their democracy in this brutal manner?
Can you come again? I didn't hear that.
Do you believe that Biden would forgive Putin for what he has been alleged to have done to America's democracy?
It's not a question of whether Biden is going to forgive or whether he's going to punish someone. Foreign policy doesn't work on the basis of punishment or on the basis of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Foreign policy works on the basis of what exactly is the interest of that particular country. How can that interest align with the interest of those who are in support or in opposition for that country? So the way things are going to work is that I think American foreign policy will be reset. And in resetting American foreign policy, that will mean identifying some of those policies that will be in alignment with what is considered the longer interest of the United States. And by this, I mean, for example, that how can some of the conflict currently going on around the world be resolved by building alliances? So Biden is going to place emphasis on building alliances. And of course, building an alliance will mean that identifying what exactly the conflict is and who are the parties to this conflict and how can you bring parties to this conflict to the table to negotiate. So in most cases, you know, even your adversaries you can work with in resolving conflicts. So if you take, for example, the Iran nuclear deal, what the United States did with the Iran nuclear deal is to bring China, Russia, Germany, and Iran to the table to negotiate that, well, this is in the best interest of the world to make sure that Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. So even though Russia and the United States and China do not necessarily agree on all issues, but they all see the containment of Iran as in the best interest of everyone. And that is also because powers do not like to compete with other powers. They want to eliminate competition. So Russia feels that Iran getting nuclear weapon will mean that they are going to be competing with Russia. So if they can agree with the United States to make sure that Iran doesn't get nuclear weapon, that will be in their best interest. And at the same time, it is also in the best interest of the United States and the rest of the world to make sure that that doesn't happen. So that is exactly the way foreign policy functions. Sometimes you are on the table with your adversaries, trying to negotiate deals. And some other times, you are seriously opposed to your adversary. So, but in the age of Trump, none of those were in practice.
Yeah.
Which is why the entire world is in disarray now. In fact, if we take as an example this current pandemic, why are we experiencing this pandemic in a way that has never happened since the early 1900s? It is because of the absence of leadership that is oftentimes provided by the United States. And that is the danger of going it alone that the Trump administration has been doing in the last 4 years. So, for example, when Obama was there, when Ebola happened, Obama realized that, well, Ebola might be in West Africa, Liberia. But at the same time, if it is not contained, it is going to become a problem for the rest of the world. Therefore, what did the Obama administration do? The first thing they did was to send health workers and some military officials to Liberia to build hospitals and contain the disease there to make sure that it doesn't spread to the rest of the world. But Obama administration didn't do it alone. The Obama administration immediately contacted other allies, particularly allies in Western Europe, and told them that, look, we all have to work together to make sure that this disease doesn't spread beyond where it is right now. And that is exactly how it was contained. Now, fast forward to the COVID-19 pandemic. So if the United States had been in a position where they were prior to the Trump administration, that pandemic would have been contained right in China, because what they would have done would have been to call a meeting of the G20 and all the other allies and say that, look, this is not a China problem. This is going to be a world problem if it is not contained. But what did the Trump administration do? They just ignored it. They said, that it's not a United States problem, so it's going to stay in China. But of course, it didn't stay in China. It traveled from China to Europe and from Europe to the United States, and see where the whole world is right now. The whole world is in a mess, and that is because of the absence of leadership.
Wow. Continue, sir.
Yeah, which the Trump administration didn't provide. So Britain was doing its own thing. France was doing its own thing. Then a lot of countries in Africa were doing their own thing. Then the WHO, that is oftentimes providing leadership in terms of health crisis, Trump said, no, we're going to withdraw from the WHO. We're not going to give them money again. We're not going to support them anymore. So that threw the entire world into crisis, which is why we are where we are right now.
I want to go on the other side now. Maybe kind of play the devil's advocate here. You know, Trump's position, or let me call it now anti-COVID-19 position. Look at it from his own perspective first. Yes, you know, let me start from the last. He got infected and he came out. All right? And he's been celebrating that like Jesus Christ who died and resurrected, you know. And now, let's look at it. He said he's against wearing of mask, the mask mandate. And, you know, there have been, even though those exceptions have not received any visibility, but there have been times where, or cases where people died wearing those masks. Though they've never received much mention in the media. That's one. Then two, he was against the lockdown. And we all know the world is yet to recover from that lockdown. And now you can see even the second wave of the virus that is upon us right now, that is supposed to be worse than the first. So a lot of governments are pussyfooting about whether they want to lock down or not. Of course, our own Buhari here said our economy is too fragile to be locked down. You understand that bit. And so also, you know, and then the case I like to, you know, cite most of the time, Sweden never locked down. Sweden lived their lives around the virus. And, you know, even though their cases, they had dead cases that were rising, even above some of their neighbors, but was never as much as that of the United States, you know, and all of that as the highest. So I'm saying all of this from Trump's mind, or what may have driven, you know, given bites to his own arguments. And also, the way the virus itself, are you following me, sir?
Yes, I'm listening. Yes.
The way the virus itself was pushed out, the messaging was such that everybody would have it, you know, one way or the other. And if you have it, it was a death sentence right there and then. But then certain loopholes started emerging. You know, somebody gets infected and is admitted, is quarantined for 14 days and all of that. And before you know, he's discharged. Nobody explains the discharging element. If he's discharged, is he going to come back or is he not going to come back? But there have been cases, one or two or three, that, of course, that have been in the public space, who said, well, I was treated with malaria tablet and here I am, I'm okay. And that is one area the managers of COVID-19 have not been able to explain. If somebody gets infected today and is discharged tomorrow, what does that mean? Because he said he's doing that in the absence of a vaccine. It doesn't mean that he will have to come back for vaccine, or he may die before the vaccine, or if he's lucky to live when the vaccine comes, then vaccine will set him free, and all of that. And then all this argument about symptomatic, asymptomatic, you know, infection or whatever, they have become a whole lot to unpack. And that seems to have given Trump power, you know, to continue to power his position against the virus. And of course, we can't say, even though he has a very strong base, we can't say all those people who are there are dead brains or who don't reason. They too may have seen the logic in what Trump had said. But all of this I've said does not mean I'm against the COVID-19 thing. I run for my life when I, you know, so I believe in it, but I'm just playing the devil's advocate here. So do you then think, from what I've said, that Trump has a point?
Here is the thing. Let's start from the lockdown.
Yes.
Lockdown can be effective if it is coordinated. Right? So if we take the example of the United States, as I was explaining earlier when we were talking about elections, that each state makes its own rules.
Yes.
So, if we take the example of Michigan, Michigan, because we have a Democratic governor, so we locked down around March, and that was able to reduce the rate of infection.
Okay.
But some of our next door neighbors that are Republican states and that were listening to Trump never locked down.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happened? Mm. So their cases were going up.
Yeah.
And because you cannot prevent people from traveling from one place to the other, so some people were traveling from those states that didn't lock down to states that did, and that started increasing the infection rate in those places. Then the second point is that it is not just about locking down, it is also about testing. So if everyone is tested and you know those who are positive and those who are negative, you can be able to isolate those who are positive for at least 14 days until the infection is off of their system. So, but when testing is completely absent and there is no rapid testing, you are not able to know those who are infected and those who are not. Then the third point is that, look, The reason why people say there should be a lockdown is to protect those who are vulnerable. And who are those that are vulnerable to this disease? You know, this disease is, this COVID-19 is an opportunistic disease. It's an opportunistic infection. And the reason why I said it's an opportunistic infection is that if you have pre-existing condition and you get infected by it, so it can accelerate the process of your being sick. But if you do not have pre-existing condition and you get infected and you isolate yourself for a few days, then you can shake it off. You can shake it off. So, but in a situation where a lot of people have pre-existing conditions, if you are infected and you get in contact with those pre-existing conditions.
Hello? Okay, so, we were saying something about the COVID-19 before the interruption, and I hope that we can still get through to him. Well, honestly, we've even gone really, really deep in the conversation, and we've almost forgotten that, time, working with time. But at the same time, of course, it's been quite enlightening, and, he's given us different dimensions from the Trump administration.
Definitely.
Okay, well, but at this point, we have to wrap it up properly with him. We can't just end the conversation. I would want him to finish up what he's saying before we wrap up the conversation with him and then move on into another conversation for the day. But in the meantime, you were saying something about COVID-19, and you asked the question talking about the Trump's administration and Trump's
perspective.
Yeah, towards the COVID-19.
But
hello sir.
Yeah,
okay, so you were saying something before the call went off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was saying that COVID, it's an opportunistic infection, and that if you get infected and you have pre-existing condition, particularly if you are someone that is vulnerable, then you can get sick. And if that person gets sick, it can accelerate death and lead to the collapse of lungs and some of your vital organs. So that is why a lot of health experts will suggest that the best way to fight this disease in the absence of a vaccine is to wear a mask.
Yeah,
when you wear a mask, you are not protecting yourself, but you are protecting others. You are protecting others because the mask will protect droplets from your mouth and your nose from spreading. So that is exactly the point. And of course, the argument against the lockdown is that it is going to affect the economy and that the economy might come crumbling if there is a total lockdown. But at the same time, you need a healthy population to make important contributions to the growth of the economy. If you do not have a healthy population, then the economy is going to crumble. It's going to crumble anyway, because if people are falling sick, and they are not able to go to work. So what is the essence of having an economy? But for Trump, his main argument is always about this, stock market. And guess what? Who are those benefiting immensely from the stock market right now? It is not those who are actually producing tangible items. It is those who are producing what you could consider intangible items, that is, the technology market. So those are the people who are making a lot of money from the pandemic, which is making the stock market to go or to skyrocket. So it's right now it's an economy that is in two parts. The first part is that the majority of the population are actually suffering, whereas the second part is the minority of the population, which is less than 0.001% of the population, are making tons of money because the pandemic is making the use of technologies unavoidable. So now everyone is doing virtual learning. You have to teach online. You have to use Zoom. So which means the stocks of Zoom in the market will be going up because everyone is buying it. And who are the major beneficiaries of the stock market right now? It is Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, and all the other technology companies. So think about it that way. And who are those suffering from the collapse of the economy? That is the tangible part of the economy. It is the vulnerable population, particularly those who are doing day-to-day jobs. Those who work in the restaurant industry and those who work in the agriculture sector. So that is the irony of the whole thing. So when you say lockdown, lockdown doesn't mean lockdown forever. It means that we need to take into consideration informed health experts' decision or health experts' recommendation about how to fight the infection, pending when there will be a vaccine. So if we all wear a mask all the time when we go out, go into a public place, then that is going to cut the rate of infection drastically. And life can gradually begin to return to normal until there is a vaccine.
Thank you, Prof.
All right. Thank you very much, Prof. Thank you so much. You've been able to give us this, this in-depth explanation and, of course, your own point of view, and which we really appreciate it. Okay, but at this point, of course, we appreciate your time, and also we have to wrap it up, and we say thank you for your time and for your contribution to Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
No, you're most welcome.
Thank you.
My best wishes. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much, sir. Please enjoy the rest of your day.
Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.